everybody. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you very much for joining me today. My guest is Tori Washington, who is an NASM certified coach and IFBB pro. Raised vegetarian and vegan since 1998, Tori built his physique entirely on a plant-based regime without the aid of supplements since 2009. Tori's training style focuses on physical symmetry and aesthetics. He disassembles your physique and reassembles it back the way you want it to be, and has therefore become one of the most sought-after coaches of celebrities and bodybuilders globally. Tori also advocates for veganism to his global fan base and brings to light the plight of animals and the need to heal Mother Earth through living a more plant-based vegan lifestyle. Thank you for joining me today, Tori.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your time. And so looking forward to this.
Thank you. So I also want to thank you for being a vegan since 1998. I personally thank you. I know the animals are grateful and Mother Earth as well. And I've been a vegan since 1988.
Wow, very nice.
Well, I'm older, so I've been vegan a little longer. and it's just a beautiful thing. And I love to see people who look their very best as a vegan, and bodybuilders certainly do that, showing humanity what's possible. And we have all of these crazy stereotypes, not just about vegans, but about people all over the world in general.
Right.
Most of them are wrong, right?
Right.
And the vegan thing is that we're thin and scrawny and we eat brown rice. Now, I think brown rice is a great food. So there's nothing wrong with that. But tell me about being vegan and physical stamina.
So you said, tell you about being vegan and physical
stamina.
Oh, stamina.
Strength and energy.
Well, you know, I guess the interesting thing in regards to that is I never focused on whether or not I didn't have the stamina or I didn't have the ability to build muscle. It was more so, it was just part of my lifestyle. I just did it anyway. So yes, I may have been more conscious of what I took into my body, but I never really looked at it as a hindrance or an advantage to doing it, to going that route. You know, it was more so just something I do, because I think a lot of my friends even would look, so that's just what Tori does. He eats plants and that's his thing. And so it never was a focal point where I was like, man, my stamina is so much better. It was always good, you know, so because I had already started eating that way and building muscle. I didn't think it was a problem because I continued to build muscle. And even to this day, I mean, I look at old photos of me competing in 2016, when I did competition then and competitions now. I've built muscle since then, and I'm continuously building muscle. So that I find as people just making excuses when they say that it's not possible or what have you, because I continue to do it. And I think it's, people are doing it out there. I just happen to be in the arena where people see me more often.
We're going to talk more about people making excuses in a moment. Because when it comes to exercise, that plays a big role.
Yes.
Now, you don't have a lot of comparison or any comparison about being a bodybuilder and not eating vegan and being a bodybuilder eating vegan. But maybe you can you compare yourself to the other bodybuilders you see who don't eat the way you do?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of them contact me because they feel a certain way. And they're, when they have given the plant-based lifestyle a chance or an opportunity, they felt better. But in the back of their mind, their concern was, I'm not going to continue to build muscle because I feel as if it won't be enough.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be enough amino acids or what have you. But I also noticed one thing too, that someone mentioned this to me the other day, and it really made sense. And they have been vegan for a while, as long as probably close to me and you as well. And in their mind, once they went vegan, it seemed that it's as if their aging process stopped.
Mm.
And this, or basically dramatically slowed down. And so that's the one thing I notice when I'm with other bodybuilders, they age quick because they're putting their bodies under such duress without the food or the assistance to help them recover and heal faster and almost have sort of a Wolverine healing factor, you know, where, you know, your body heals so quickly. And so I see that, and their aging process is very fast, you know, because a lot of them tend to take in the drugs too. And so the drugs can also do that as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mortgaging your health for results today.
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
And you pay later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your bio says that you disassemble physique and reassemble them back to the way you want it to be. Give me an example of that. What does that mean?
Well, I'm an engineer by trade.
Me too.
You know, so
you're mechanical. I'm chemical. Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, mechanical engineering, we do a lot of building. And, you know, whether it's the automobile, whether it's the car, whether it's bridges, whether it's buildings, you know, so, and what we do is we take the foundation and we look up at the foundation and say, okay, how can we put it into a state of where it'll last for a long time? So I say disassemble and reassembly because when I was younger, I used to take things apart to see how it worked, and then I would put it back together. And I, you know, I've done that with my cars. I've taken the engine out and put the engine back in to make it run better. And so I decided to take that design aspect of my engineering background, and that's what I do. So I look at people's physique. And when I disassemble it, I remove what they have and replace it with what they want.
So
basically,
that.
it's a terminology, not literally. I'm not pulling your arm out the socket and then putting it back in the place. But you know what I mean.
I know some people would sign up to do that.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's a crazy world, right? Okay, so I got your Vitality ebook. So anybody who wants to can go to your website, toriwoodwashington.com, and sign up for this free Vitality book. And it's a nice little guide in terms of what to eat. It has some recipes. It talks a little bit about you. And then you have a quad burner in here. And I watched some of those videos. I don't go to a gym. I do my workouts at home. I have some light weights. We talked about excuses a moment ago, and I try and move every day. And if I'm not going to do some kind of workout, I'll walk. But I'm not a bodybuilder. And just like a lot of people, I would like to have more muscle in certain places. I would like to be more tone in certain places. And I do some of those exercises, but I don't do them as slowly as you do them, and I don't do as many reps, and I don't do them consistently. So those are things that I would like to work on in the future. Talk about doing these exercises slowly.
Time under tension. That's where muscle is built. And time under tension can mean many different things. And one of them is the process of taking it slow with the weight. What you're allowing your body to do is the eccentric portion, or basically the, after you come up to the contraction, let's say you're doing a barbell curl and you come to the top and you squeeze, the process to lower it is more building for muscle than the process to bring it up. Because you're breaking down the muscle and you're tearing up muscle fibers, which sounds bad, but it's it's what is necessary in order to build muscle. And there has been some scientific proof that shows the eccentric portion of the exercise is more suitable for building muscle than the other aspect. And so that's why we do it slowly. And now you can do it slower in many different facets. Time under tension can also mean how many reps you're doing, you know, and of course the slow. But, you know, you switch it up because you want the muscle to be well-rounded and well-developed. So that's why the reps change. Sometimes the reps are power reps, where they're 3 reps to 5 reps, where it's just, there's really no slow down. You just want to get it up as fast as you can. Not as fast as you can, but you just want to move the weight. And so therefore you're building power, you know, so you want to build power. You want to build strength. You want to build stamina. You look to do it all with the muscle. So that way you're well-rounded, as I mentioned earlier, and you're not just stuck in one mode.
Okay. I guess I'm stuck in one mode.
A lot of people are, you know, they don't realize that they need to switch things up unless they find a coach who lets them know that you need to change your routine, and not necessarily every week, but you change it with 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, give yourself time to, the body will adapt, and then you adjust. That way you continuously grow.
Now, for many people, the thing about exercise to keep doing it is you have to like it in some way. Now, people say no pain, no gain. There's a certain part of exercise where you need to literally get past your own resistance, not just the resistance you're doing in your exercise.
Right.
And I have one memory of somebody I met through my vegan activism, maybe 20 years ago. I don't remember how long it was. He used to come to some meetings that I used to have. And he was a bodybuilder. And he was, I forget what it was called, but he was trying some new method. And he invited me to come to this little gym. And it was tiny. It was like some machines in a very small space. But his idea was that you do it all very quickly. Like the routine is fast and hard. And he tried these exercises on me and it was painful and I absolutely hated it. And I never went back. So what's your recommendation there to enjoy this process?
It has to be the individual. The individual needs to look at their why for even doing this particular work. There has to be a strong enough why to get you to motivated to get up and do it. Sometimes it takes accountability. Sometimes it takes someone that you are inspired by or look up to hold you accountable to doing that activity. And results too. It's results. Mm-hmm. When you get the results that you're looking for or that you want, it can drive you to proceed even further. You know, I have a client now, we've been training for about 2-3 years. But her goal was just to build her legs, build her glutes. She just wanted big legs, big glutes. And so I was just doing that for her. But eventually she got to a point, she said, you know, I want to get leaner now. And I said, well, that's a different ball game. That's going to involve a lot more data-driven tracking for your nutrients, your calories, you know, plus the workouts and added cardio if necessary. She was like, I'm ready for that. I said, okay. And since we started at 20 pounds, after 10, 12 weeks are gone. And she looks like a whole different person than what I worked with in the beginning. And now she's on the path where she said, you know what? I think I want to go ahead and just might as well compete. I said, you might as well, you know, you're already in that arena, you know, so it's interesting to watch, you know, but her why and her accountability to me was increased. And now she just pushed to even do more, you know, so it's all about the individual and what they're looking for, because like you mentioned, that fast paced, high intense workout with the weights that you were doing, some people don't like that, you know, they don't want it to be so high pace. And some people are so active that they always have to be moving, that they need stuff like that. And that's, those types of activities are more suited to people that really want to sweat. And like you said, you're moving fast. So it's a circuit of high intense training and you're going to sweat.
What I don't like is pain. I just don't like pain.
It definitely is painful. And that's why I said that's that tearing up of that muscle fiber. And I think it equates to the pain that you're feeling. The pain, I guess we may be a bit narcissistic when it comes to bodybuilding. We love it. When we feel the pain, we're like, yeah, I'm really burning that muscle. And so now we want to know, okay, what is it going to feel like in the next couple of days? And
now, yeah. Do you ever get to a point where you like the way you look and you just want to maintain? And then is the work different? Or do you always want to push it?
I always want to push it. I don't think I've reached that point yet to where I'm like, I just want to maintain this. No, but I have clients that say, you know, I just want to maintain where I'm at.
Okay. Right.
But, you know, for me, it's always about continuous improvement. You know, it's the Japanese terminology, Kaizen, and that is continuous improvement. And so that's what I'm always looking to do when it comes to my physical. And of course, with everything else, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, always improving. But physically, you know, naturally too, there is a turn, there's a time when you come to a point where you aren't able to go any further because the body naturally, without any type of added enhancements, can only go so far with, you know, just pushing. Because then as you age, you know, you start to lose muscle, you can slow it down and things like that. But yeah, I'm always looking to improve.
Well, I haven't met you in person. I've seen some of the photos on your website. You look really good.
Thank you very much.
I don't know what more you want to do, but
I think that's what keeps me going to competing too, because competitions are sort of a pathway to always improving. Because if you take feedback from the judges, they're going to ask you to do certain things based upon what they see. You know, it's a bit subjective because the individual has an idea of what they like, and then that individual may have an idea of what he likes. You know, so you're basically playing with someone else's opinion, but they're a judge. And if they're going to see you all the time, they're looking forward to those changes being done. And when they see that you have gone to put the effort in to increase your, say, for example, your shoulder width to waist ratio, they'll make that duly noted, like, oh, okay, he took my advice and he started to do such and such. And so competition keeps you in that improvement phase. And so what happens is when people stop competing or what have you, they tend to lose focus and they don't know how to stay on track. But, and I can see that happening, because once you stop competing, you're thinking, yes, I'm fine now. Nothing to improve upon. But yeah, I think the competitions help that.
Okay. Well, me personally, I want to get to a place, I don't know if people can ever be satisfied with themselves. We're just all so critical of ourselves. But I would really like to get to a place where I'm happy with where I'm at and then maintain so it doesn't hurt.
And that's possible, because once you get, and usually it's more controllable with you maintaining your nutritional intake. That's the key, because the workouts, you know, will always be there. And, you know, you can work out as much as you want, but if you're not controlling your nutritional intake, it's not going to be much changes, unless you just happen to have a very high metabolism. You know, so if you are overweight and then all you do is work out, but you still eat the same, you're not really doing much.
Yeah. I do push-ups, and maybe you could talk a little about push-ups. I know there are many different ways to do them to help you get into doing them correctly. But I find they are like the worst thing I could possibly do. I mean, my body just does not want to go there. I do them, but my body's like, this is the worst thing for you. What do you have tips on push-ups and how to get to a place where the body's like, okay, you got this? Or do they always feel terrible?
Well, they're very similar to a pull-up. You know, certain people have problems doing pull-ups and they don't like doing them either because, you know, it's tough. Mm-hmm. Push-ups and pull-ups are multi-joint movements, meaning they work a lot of different body parts. And so when all these body parts are in balance, push-up is easy. What I mean by that is you have strong triceps, shoulders, chest, back, biceps, abs, lower back, legs are powerful. All of these help to stabilize you, and then the push-up becomes easy. And that's why people can end up doing 100 push-ups at a time. It's when there isn't balance and the push-ups that become hard, people don't want to do them. Same thing with the pull-up. So what I noticed with this client that I just referred to, her pull-ups now have become, she's so excited. She can do push-up pull-ups. She's doing pull-ups. She couldn't do one. Now she's doing close to 5. And that's a big improvement because pull-ups are notably a very hard thing to do for most people. And push-ups can be as well. To make push-ups good, there's a little things you can do to increase it. And usually what you do is you progress. You start off pushing off of a wall, and then you slowly get more of an angle. Then you get to a point where you're pushing up off of a bar that's on a bench. You know, let's say, for example, I know you're not in the gym, but if you have a bench, you had a bar up there, you're coming down on it, but you're not on the ground. You're doing that because you're progressing to going full horizontal. And then once you go full horizontal, as long as your arms and your head and your torso are in the shape of an arrowhead, you're doing it right. You know what I mean by that? See how the arrowhead is? That's how your hands, your arms should be. Your arms should be in that arrow position and your push-up. It's harder, but it involves the specific muscle group that you're looking for, as well as it's less damage to the shoulders because you're not in this position. This position is not where you want to be. Because if you push up here, you're putting your shoulder in a compromising position. Sometimes I think people start that way and it seems easier, but over time you're doing damage to the shoulder and you know you can cause problems later on in life.
That's not good.
Yeah, and that's one of the things when it comes to my training, my goal is to prevent injury and to continue to keep a person's ability to train forever. Because that's how I look at it. You know, I know a lot of times I have a lot of people that, man, I have injury. And I'm thinking, because a lot of people live with their ego and they want to see how much they can push and lift. And I'm thinking, what is that doing for you? You know, it looks good for Instagram or something like that. But then you get this injury and you're like, what did I do to myself? You know, so you just have to progress into the push-up. And there's a lot of little things, you know, you can dumbbells, you can do different things, but you have to strengthen your whole body, your core, your shoulders, your back, your biceps, your triceps, because those are all muscle groups that assist in that push-up.
I do a lot of yoga. And that helps because that works the full body.
Ashtanga?
Yeah, I do a combination of mostly Ashtanga. Yeah.
Okay.
Power yoga.
Ashtanga has a lot of that, the going down and pushing up type of thing.
Right. The arms aren't in an arrowhead though, but.
Well, when I say arrowhead, it's not necessarily this.
Okay.
I was meaning more so the way your shoulders, your elbows come away from your body. You want your elbows to be at a 45 degree angle away from the body, not this close and not up here.
Right. Because in the yoga, I think the arms are closer.
Correct. Because it seems like it's hitting a lot more triceps.
Do you ever work with people who have had surgery either for health reasons or for accidents? And how do you work through that? Because I imagine it's a little more difficult to make things symmetrical.
Yes. So at those are the people that they're really looking to get stronger, build muscle, not and lose weight, but they're not in that phase of I want to be a bodybuilder. They're almost basically close to what you were saying about they want to maintain. And so when it comes to their injuries and their surgery, we have to work around it. But what I do is I change up the exercise to allow them to get the same results from the specific movement that I may have wanted them to do, but we do it a slightly differently. And, you know, there's so many variables that come into play when it comes to changing up the variation, the muscle, the way let's say you have the cable, you can pull the cable in a different angle to still hit the muscle the way you need it to, because I have a lot of clients that have shoulder injuries.
Right.
And so they've done surgery, so they can't go so high. They have to, and it's challenging. The only drawback is I can't push them as hard, you know, because it's fun when someone has no injuries and you can just work, you know, we can just work hard and get it done. Whereas when they have injuries, I have to go back into, all right, how do I work this muscle still without them having this asymmetric look, as you mentioned, because you want them to have symmetry. You don't want them to have, and it's doable, very doable. But it can be fun too.
Do you include flexibility exercises in your practice?
As much as I possibly can.
Because a lot of bodybuilders are not flexible.
Yes, but a lot of people do come to me just for building. We may talk about the flexibility aspect of it. But of course, you know, when it comes to training with me, we do stretch prior to the exercises with the dynamic stretching movements. And sometimes, you know, we can discuss stretching after. Sometimes some clients I do stretch after, and some clients they just stretch on their own. But we talk about it more. And a lot of the muscle fascia, you know, sort of the foam rolling, that helps a lot, because you have to need to break up those knots in that muscle, because that's what's also taking away from their flexibility. And you're right. Even myself, sometimes I don't stretch enough, or I do yoga enough, because I think we train so intense and we're like, I don't feel like doing that. But it's very important. It's when I was doing it consistently daily, my goal was to get to a split. I almost got there, but then I stopped.
Yeah, I hear you. I like doing splits, and I'm not quite there anymore, because it's everyday practice. Yeah. Every day. Yeah.
It surely is.
Every day. So how long do you practice every day?
Training, working out?
Yeah.
About 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes. That's about it.
Okay. That's not too long.
No, and that's the thing. I think a lot of people don't realize. And some people say, oh, you're supposed to be in there long because it's your lifetime. It's your livelihood. It's, you know, we don't move enough outside of our daily activities. But for me, I don't really want to spend too much time in there, because I feel like then I'm just drawing it out. You know, the maximum amount of energy that you get from the body happens within the first 45 to minutes to an hour. And then after that, you're really running on fumes. So I like to really go in there hard, not talk, no chat, and just hit it. I'm hitting it.
Okay. You mentioned that nutrition is really important. So just give us an idea. What do you eat during the day and maybe before and after you work out?
You know, it's interesting. I think this must be a question that is spoken of so often when it comes to someone training, what you eat and what you eat after, before and after. I never really focused on that before. You know, it was never a thing for me. I would just, because there are days where I get up and I go to the gym, you know, of course I hadn't eaten, you know, but there are also days where I do eat and I go to the gym. But I know with me, I never really looked at it as, okay, I'm going to eat this in order to give me the energy to push through my workout. What pushes me through my workout is my mental stability. So when my mindset is ready, I'm there. I don't need to have a pre-workout meal. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the after meal is not necessarily where I set it up for after, but when I'm speaking with individuals about it and they're looking for direction, I will mention to them that protein and a fast digesting carbohydrate are better. In that sense, what I mean is the fast digesting carbohydrate allows the protein to be uptaken into the system faster because it jumps and digests very quickly. And so that quick digestion process allows for the blood sugar to be to recover faster. And a lot of times, you know, if they want something even faster, fruit is good for the liver. It replenishes the glycogen in the liver faster. And those are things you can do after a workout. And that's why people do a shake. You know, they do a shake because it's already pre-digested. It's broken down enough to where they can drink it and it gets digested quick and gets into their bloodstream and they can get their aminos in and they can repair muscle faster. And then, of course, you definitely want to eat. I like to eat like tofu, tempeh, seitan, sweet potatoes, Japanese sweet potatoes specifically.
Love them.
Sometimes rice. You know, lately, I haven't been big on rice. I don't know why. Because I think the Japanese sweet potatoes have been just taken over.
Yeah, and they're like candy sometimes.
I know. And that's and I have a sweet tooth, so it's perfect for me. I get them as much as possible. And, you know, those are the things that I like to eat after. And, you know, so maybe beans and rice sometimes. And because in Jamaica, you know, we eat rice and peas. You know, that's what we call it. You know, so I used to eat that constantly. So maybe that's why I don't eat it as much. I don't know. But, or, you know, something simple, like a slice of Ezekiel bread with some almond butter or some peanut butter on it. You know, things like that. You know, my eating regimen is not complicated. It's more so, since I'm tracking macros when I'm getting ready for competition, that makes it easier for me because then I can pretty much eat the things that I want to eat as long as I get them in, get it into the requirements of the calories that I need for the day. And those calories are broken up into the macronutrients, which are carbohydrates, protein, and fats. So doing it that way allows me more flexibility and freedom with what I want to eat.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Now, you say on your website that you don't take any supplements and vitamins.
So that has changed. In the beginning, I was so against it. Oh my gosh. I was like, protein shakes. No, I just want to eat. I just creatine. No, none of this. BCAAs. I didn't do any of that. I always just trained and ate food. And I did it for up to about 2015, you know, where I was just doing that. And, you know, even when I would get protein shakes from companies, I would just give it a shot, taste it out, and not necessarily make it a committed thing for me to do because I liked eating food instead. And so I think eventually I got to a point where I said, you know what? Everything has its place, you know, so allow people want to do protein shakes because sometimes they're like, I don't have the time to cook or make some food or get something. I want to be able to get nutrition in quickly. And they're convenient. Yeah. You know, there are plenty of them on the market now, especially when it comes to the plant-based options, because I think a lot of these companies are seeing that more people are moving away from whey because they're noticing the upset stomach and the gastrointestinal
problem. No way.
Right.
No way.
So I've started to include it. Now I talk about it. And I really just do simple protein shake and BCAAs here and there. And they're more so when I'm getting in my competition phase, because then my protein requirement goes up a little higher. And so when I'm on the go often with clients and what have you, the shakes help because I can just take a shake and then eat later, you know, what have you. And, or sometimes I do them together. That way I'm getting in enough nutrients at that time, since I might be gone for a little while, to allow me to eat, be prepared for the next meal. So on my, I don't know if it shouldn't be on there, because I think I've changed it, because we discussed that, me and my team, that at first we were going to attempt to go that route, and even further on, but I, because it would put me in a niche market, you know, as and to continue to say that I'm not no longer supplement driven, but I'm not big on supplements. And that's the thing I point out, that they're called supplements. They're not called necessity. You know, so it's to supplement your already flawless nutritional intake, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. I like eating. I like getting my calories from food. So just to have a shake to get the nutrients I need, that's not something that appeals to me. Although I do like to have a smoothie from time to time, just because I like them. But for everyone, not just bodybuilders, there are some supplements that we do need to take, like B12 and vitamin D. And so, maybe... Yeah. And maybe some DHA, EPA. Do you agree with that?
Well, there's some, you know, I find it very, very interesting that there was a time when those things weren't even mentioned.
Right. You
know, what I mean by that is, it's like as society gets more technologically advanced, now we're like, oh, you need this, you need this, and you need this. And there are people like, okay, you can attest to it. You've been vegan for 30 plus years. When you started out, no one said to you, hey man, B12 is going to be a problem. You didn't have any idea about that.
No, but there were some people that were vegan, long-term vegans, that died early. And there was science behind it, realizing that they were either depleted in B12. And now there's this understanding that DHA and EPA play an important part in our heart and brain health.
So I guess the point I'm getting to is then what vegans are ultimately saying or proving, if this is the case, that this nutritional way of living is not 100% effective, that people should... Then that means you're going to just be taking supplements for the rest of your life. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's complicated.
So that's one of the reasons why I haven't been this person to push it onto people, because everything, it seems that not everything, but there is a flaw, because if you're going to say, well, you just take these supplements, some people don't want to take supplements for the rest of their life. You know, sure. They want to just eat food. And so if you're saying, oh, well, since you're not eating this, you're not going to get this, you got to take a supplement. To the individual who is very biased against it, they look at it like, I don't want to have to take supplements. I can just eat this veal or eat this lamb chop and I'll get my whatever.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I recommend that everybody, vegans and omnivores, take B12. Because we live in a sterile society. We're not in the dirt like humans used to be. And that's where they got their B12 from. Some people think they get their B12 from animals by eating animals, and the animals get it because they're in the dirt. But most people today are deficient in B12. Everybody needs a supplement. And as we age, it gets more complicated. So I'm not just saying it's for vegans. I'm saying it's for everybody. And there's more evidence now that this omega-3 DHA EPA is also beneficial, especially as we age. So if you don't want to take supplements, hey, that's fine. And I understand you're saying that if you say eat vegan, but you have to take these supplements, I say you have to take these supplements no matter what you eat.
Yeah, and I can agree with that, you know, because even when people B12, us, you know, you look at some of the studies, but this is where I'm sort of a radical. Studies are flawed because you never know where the money it leads to. You know, we're basing it off of someone's, almost their opinion, because they may have a hidden agenda in the reasoning that they're pushing this methodology or this science. And now we live in a day and age where science is one. One person's way of science is the way. This person's is flawed. And so we now say, follow the science, but who's science? So is it because it's only coming from this? That's why I follow it? Or can I look at another science journal? Can I look at some other person's way of doing something? Society said, no, it's only this. Mm-hmm. But the individual should be allowed the opportunity to say, no, I want to read this research. I'm going to check this research, because as I started, the follow the money is a path to see, okay, who is behind this research and why? You know, so the reason I say that is thinking about with all the supplement push for B12, omega-3, DHEA, you know, these things, you know, and you mentioned of how vegans died in the past because they may have been deficient in certain things. That also goes down to a lot of people say, you're still deficient in protein because you don't get the amino acids in the way that you get them from animals. Mm-hmm. So it's a very complicated subject.
Absolutely.
And it allows, but people should be able to discuss it in an objective manner. And I think what tends to occur more than not, is subjective discussions where the emotions get tied up versus the idea to let people speak, you know what I mean? Speak and go based off of experience as well. And I mentioned that as I remember I was at an event and a person brought up the same thing about, oh, everybody should get their blood checked and see how what they're deficient in. Mostly vegans going to be deficient in iron. They're going to be deficient in vitamin D and all these different things. When it comes to, for example, the hormone vitamin D, and now it's become larger in regards to health, it's always a change. There's going to be something new next time. And mm-hmm. at one point for vegans, it was protein. Then now it was B12. Now vitamin D, what's next? It's just going to keep going. I like to say that the body is so infinitely sound that we still don't know what it can do. There's things that people who have never taken a simple supplement in their life are living probably healthier than other people taking them, because where are these supplements coming from? Mm-hmm. You know, what are their long-term effects on the body from breaking them down on a daily basis? We don't know. We're all basically a study, you know, and it just continues. Yes, there's science out there, there's data, there's research. But as I mentioned, it can be flawed because it can be driven by an agenda that maybe to push something else. You know, what's the next thing to push? Like, you know, I want to say that this is bad, so that way, give me more of the data to show that it's this way, and therefore I can push this. For example, if we look at autism and different things, no one wants to recognize that maybe early vaccinations on children when they were as babies has a long-term effect.
Sure.
You don't want to say that, because then the pharmaceutical companies will say, hey, no, that's not true. But is there some connection where they work together? They say the same company creates the vaccination.
Especially combining a bunch of them at the same time in a tiny little body.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that little body has not reached maturity.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's just, I look at them, you know, B12 was, it's kind of like, because me and one of my close friends, we had a discussion too, because he felt the same when it comes to the supplements, because we were very adamant about, like, oh, supplements, everybody wants to take supplements, this, that, and the other. And, you know, then we started to say, you know what, everything has their place. We do it here and there. When I started, you know, being a little bit more consistent with B12, I didn't notice a difference. You know, I just, all right, because people saying that it should be done, you know, and same thing with vitamin D, but I love getting mine from the sun. That's just the way anytime I'm doing sun, I feel way better. The sun gives me so much more energy. I feel like my body is healing. I improve upon my look, everything. And of course, I think the misunderstanding was that how much sun to get. And I didn't realize until, you know, maybe years ago that the darker the skin, the longer you need to be in the sun. Mm. And a lot of people of my skin complexion and darker don't like the sun. Like, oh no, I don't want to be in the sun. I don't want to get darker. But I'm like, that's not the reason. There's a certain amount of time you need to be just to get your vitamin D stores. And then these same people run into health issues later on. And with so much going on in the world, how do you associate it with, oh, a lack of vitamin D? You know what I'm saying? It's one thing, they'll go to, oh, I just wasn't, I don't know, something. That was just something else. And someone of your skin complexion doesn't need as much. You know, they're, you know, but then there are people of your skin complexion that will stay longer because they want to get darker when they only need 15 minutes to get the vitamin D stores, and then that's enough. But
well, you know, the more I just get more freckles.
But yeah,
and then they all start to combine together.
Right. And so to back to your point, you know, I do them here and there when it comes to the DHEA and divided.
I didn't mean DHEA, which is a popular supplement. I meant DHA.
Hey, gotcha.
Which is what the body makes from consuming omega-3 fatty acids.
Right.
Or what people get from fish or algae.
Right.
There's a difference, but they're both very popular.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. I've seen that. And it's very, you know, it's an interesting topic. It's very interesting.
I agree with you. It's really impossible to know what the truth is. The bar is always changing over the decades. We learn more. And it's hard to trust. There's a lot of compromise because we live in a capitalistic society and people are motivated by money, unfortunately. And even the most well-meaning scientists will do the work they're asked to do. And some of them will convince themselves that it's good work. And they don't even realize that they're compromising.
Right.
It's that complicated.
Yeah.
So it is hard, and we can't all be studying all the studies.
Correct. And to that end, most people know this. So, you know, it's like the fine print. How many people really read the fine print?
No.
They're just like, oh, I'll just sign it.
That's
and
right.
And then like, what? I signed what? You signed that I could take your shoes.
Yeah. Now, I believe in eating real food, real plant foods. I mean, number one, that's the foundation. And I review a lot of people's programs and as a job that I have. And a lot of people are promoting herbs and supplements. And I keep saying, but where are you talking about the foundation of eating real plant foods, greens and beans and mushrooms and berries? And that's not there. And some people may feel some improvement by taking a supplement or taking some herbs or something because they're not on the ideal diet. So to me, that's the foundation. The diet is first. We live in a complicated, very toxic world. Our food may not be as nutritious as it used to be because our soils are a disaster. And so that's where a little extra of this and that may come in handy. But we don't know. We're all
and I'm glad you said
we're all
that.
Experiments.
Yeah, you're right.
We don't know. That's,
and so it's to the point of really live to your best that you know. And not in the sense that we have so many people who feel as if you aren't doing what I'm doing, then you're doing it wrong. And this is where we need to get out of this mentality, because everybody's body is slightly different. You know, someone may metabolize carbohydrates different than mine. You know, I may be able to eat a whole bunch of fiber and be okay. Whereas someone eats 20 grams of fiber, they're having problems.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, their makeup over time. And so we have to look at it from a standpoint of each person as an individual and, you know, what are their needs? You know, that's where vitamins have a problem, because they have so much of whatever, and that person may not need 300 milligrams of this. You know, that may be too much because they already get it from a different source. Yep. Their body may create it in a different way. And now they're taking this vitamin because they're told, hey, you need vitamin C, so take this vitamin. And then they take vitamin C or this vitamin with all these different concoctions in it and maybe messing something else up in the same pill.
Right. There you have it. Well, Tori Washington, I am so glad to be able to meet you and to talk with you and hear about your perspectives and how you work. I love that you have a mechanical engineering background and that you've applied that to your bodybuilding. That's just simply brilliant.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, it's always sort of a different perspective, a different unique experience with each podcast that I do. And this one, you know, it met the case. It's different. It's not the normal. And I'm glad to have been a part of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very
welcome. Thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food. Everybody, you can check out toriwashington.com for more information and get that Vitality booklet. I think it's really informative and fun, and I'm going to get to do those squats and lunges slowly and then do them in power, and let's see what happens.
Yes, ma'am.
Maybe I'll start enjoying the pain. Okay, take care, be well. Thank you for joining me. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Tori Washington, everybody. Here's someone who is a great example of what you can do on a healthy vegan diet and being the best you can be. And I can't wait to start working out. That was really inspirational for me. I always get inspired talking to people like Tori. And before I go, I have a few things I want to let you know about. Mercy for Animals is informing people about a very dangerous bill that could actually wipe out hundreds of animal cruelty laws. On their website, it says, the Exposing Agriculture Trade Suppression Act. Exposing Agriculture Trade Suppression, the acronym is EATS. I love acronyms. But in this case, I don't love what this is about. This is a cleverly named piece of legislation with a dangerous goal. The bill threatens the most basic protections for farmed animals and was just introduced in Congress. The act is designed to wipe out existing state laws that ban the cruel confinement of egg-laying hens, mother pigs, and baby calves used for veal. If passed, it could also destroy hundreds of other protections against the worst cruelties, such as abuse of dogs in puppy mills, killing animals for the wildlife trade, and painful experiments inflicted on animals for cosmetic testing. It could also undermine state laws on a vast range of concerns, including pesticide application on fields, arsenic in food, protection against lead poisoning, chemicals in baby food containers, pollution standards for spraying sewage on crops, flammability standards for cigarettes, and child labor. The members of Congress who represent your interests need to hear from you. Please contact your senator and representatives and urge them to oppose the EATS Act S-2619 HR-4999. Tell your lawmakers that this legislation would have devastating consequences for animals and people. I will give you the link to the Mercy for Animals article in this podcast post, and I hope you will contact your representatives. This bill sounds so unbelievably bad. We've come so far, and we have so much more work to do, and this would really bring things back in a bad way. Also, I want to let you know about Brightline Eating. So Brightline Eating was founded by Dr. Susan Pierce Thompson. I've had her on the program numerous times, and she has a powerful story, and she's used her personal experience and her professional training to put together a program that really helps people who struggle with weight loss to gain confidence and to obtain their ideal weight. I have said numerous times, this is not a diet for everyone. It's not something that I am personally interested in, but it is very helpful for people who struggle with addiction. For those who are still struggling with weight loss, Brightline Eating now has a new membership program that some of you may be interested in. And Brightline Eating, as I mentioned, it's a scientifically grounded weight loss solution that will help get your brain on board to achieve the body that's right for you and live your best life forever. I will give you a link to the membership program in this podcast. It's $20 a month. I just want to be upfront about that. And it includes many things: the Bootcamp Foundational Course, the Mindfulness Meditation Companion Course, the Bright Lifers Continuity Program, tools and support, my homeroom private online support community, daily accountability calls, weekly coaching calls and office hours, Bright Nuance coaching calls with Susan Pierce Thompson, monthly calls with Dr. Joy Jacobs, the eating disorder specialist, and more. And one thing I think that Dr. Thompson has realized since starting this program is that people need ongoing support, because it's very easy, even when you've changed a lot of behavior, there are still triggers that can cause you to go backwards a little. And regular support really helps. Now, some of us can get that support from our family, from our friends, from different communities. But some people need more, and this program may just be the thing. Okay, so I just wanted to let you know about those two things. Please, please, please call your representatives about the EATS Act, and maybe you're inspired to up your workout routine a little bit more, thanks to Tori Washington. I hope so. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass, your host. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I always welcome comments and questions. You can send an email with any comments and questions to info@realmeals.org. Thanks so much for listening. Have a delicious week. We'll be right back.